Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Mark Grossman, Director General of the Foreign Service and Director of Human Resources at the U.S. Department of State. And joining me is another PwC partner, Patty Fisher. Mark, in this last segment, we'd like to talk about the future. And we all know that technology, and especially the advances, are changing our society. And my question is, how has technology affected your work at the state, and how do you see it changing your work in the future?
I think it'll change the work that diplomats do, maybe beyond all recognition in some ways. Let me give you two examples. First, we are right now still an organization in which you are, how would I put this, in which you're rewarded for how clever you are in obtaining information, rather than how important that information is to the team. And that has to change. And there are many examples in government, and I hope sometimes now in the State Department as well, where people are trying to change that attitude. And I guess the term of art is to become a knowledge-based organization. And that's what we need to become. Information and people are the two most important assets that we have, and we need to manage both of them better. And we need to start managing information by recognizing that everybody has to be part of the information chain if we're going to go forward. Second thing is, I believe that how we deal with information to our public, and not the American public only, but to our foreign public as well, has to become much more technologically adept. I'll give you an example of that. During the war in Kosovo, in Sweden, we have a wonderful, wonderful, far-sighted ambassador in Sweden, and he decided to put up a website so he could get out information on the American perspective on what we were doing in Kosovo. So they stood this website up one of the months of the Kosovo War, and in a month, they had 10 million hits. There are 4 million Swedes. So this ability to reach large numbers of people, I think, is going to change in very many ways the work that diplomats do. They're going to have to do a lot more media, a lot more dealing with people, and a lot more use of technology.
Aside from the technology and being able to manage information, it seems to me that diplomats have to have a knowledge base that just expands so many subject matters. What kind of skills do you require to gain that kind of knowledge?
Well, Patty, I think I'd step back a minute, though, and think about what the value added is of a diplomat, and certainly someone from the State Department. And again, we're here talking about overseas, and we haven't really focused very much on our civil service colleagues, but that's important, and that's important, too. But overseas, what's the value added of someone from the State Department? The value added is someone who can provide context. What's all this mean? You know, what's it mean to live in Turkey or Belgium or Bangladesh or China? And as other parts of the United States government, all the other parts of the executive branch who are working there need context. How do I do this? How do I manage this? And the other thing that we provide in terms of value added is we integrate foreign policy. So, yes, there are people from many other government agencies, but the integrator of that policy really is the department. So diplomats have then two challenges. One is to be able to make that value added in terms of context and integration, and also to know enough about subjects to be serious. And that's why I say that training is now so much more important. If you look, as we were talking about earlier, at the 18 or 19 strategic goals of the United States, nobody joins the Foreign Service, nobody joins the State Department able to understand, manage, or lead in all of those areas. And we need to train for that. And also, as we were talking about before, about the study that was done, I mean, heck, we're not going to attract people unless we can attract them through training. So I think if we keep focused on what the goal is, if we keep focused on what our value added is, and then fill in and recognize that, as you say, we've got to make sure we're up to date with the challenges that the United States faces, I think we'll be all right.
Well, you sort of posed my next question, which is what type of training will be needed to get this kind of these skills?
Well, I think two kinds of training. One is, but really three. One is, I don't want to leave this program without saying that the kind of training we do now in languages, in skill-specific training, are unimportant. They really are. People ought to speak the language that they're going to. People ought to understand the technicalities of their jobs. So that's one category of training. But the second category is what we talked about in the last segment, which is leadership and management training. We have got to bring people up to their full potential when we ask them to lead other people. And so we've got to deal that with that on a continuum across people's careers. But third, and it goes back to the point that Patty was making, we need also to be training people to deal with all these new actors. I mean, you're not born with the ability to be on television. You're not born with the ability to manage your relations with non-governmental organizations. You're not born with the ability to talk about scientific issues. You need to be able to do that as part of your professional development. And I think that's something that we will have to really focus in on. The diplomat of the future is going to have to do all of these things simultaneously. Days are gone when everybody's going to be kind of a specialist down some stovepipe. It isn't going to work.
Mark, what advice would you give a young person contemplating a career in foreign diplomacy?
Well, I obviously would tell them to come on down. I hope that we can get as many people as possible to be interested. And in a sense, I don't mean to be argumentative, but I would make the pitch that isn't foreign diplomacy. What I'm asking people to do is to serve their country. What I'm asking people to do is be for the United States and represent the United States of America abroad and to kind of push forward America's purposes abroad. So there's really very little foreign about it. I mean, there's some days, actually, I think we ought to change the name of the Foreign Service because people think it's the Foreign Legion or the Forest Service. But what it's about is promoting and protecting the United States of America. And as I said earlier, I mean, I can't provide the kind of salaries that a private sector company can provide. And there may be a lot more obstacles sometimes to dealing with the government than perhaps in the private sector. But there is something very, very satisfying about public service. And that's what we ought to keep focused here on, is that we're asking people to make sacrifices and to do things they might not otherwise do in the service of their country. And I know our military colleagues very, very effectively talk about the need for military readiness. And we need to talk more and more about the need for diplomatic readiness. We need the right kind of people, and they need to have the right infrastructure and the right backing from our public if we're going to get this job done. The world is a very dangerous place, and we're asking people to go into it to serve their country, and I think we ought to support them.
Going forward, what do you think will be the major challenges the State Department will face?
I think the State Department is changing now, but will continue to change from being essentially a passive organization into an active organization. And I don't say passive in any denigrating way. Our job for many years was to go abroad and observe and report. And I think all of this conversation we've had would lead you to conclude that this is going to be a much more active job in the future. And that's not to say that I've been, you know, kind of bored and hanging around for 26 years, nor all of my predecessors. We've done an important job. But new people are going to be pioneering because they're going to be much more active. They're going to sell the United States more. They're going to participate more in our foreign policy. And I think that's a good thing. So the department's organization and its people have to really look hard about what the job is, what's happening in this world. And again, to go back to the conversation we were having earlier, it's not anymore the job to send memos and points and who should say what up top. It's now the job that you have to do this. And I think that's a very exciting thing.
We're about ready to have an election, and so I'm curious, everyone's planning for a transition. How is transition being planned for at the Department of State?
Well, we in the Bureau of Human Resources are planning for a transition by trying to get all the information that you could possibly imagine together. And whomever wins the election and whomever sits across from me and wants to know where people are and what they're doing and how many people are where and what they're all up to, I hope I'll be able to answer those questions.
And what kind of management advice would you give those new people in terms of running the department?
Well, I don't know if it's my place to give management advice. I want people who come to the State Department, whether they are political appointees or whether they are new officers, foreign service or civil service, to recognize, again, public service, to recognize that the State Department is the essential partner if we're going to have a sensible national security strategy for our country, to recognize that the people in the Foreign Service and the civil service have sacrificed to be part of that national security structure, and that this is a serious place. It ought to be treated seriously. And that if you'll treat it seriously, then this is a department that will really perform for whomever asks it to.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time, Mark. And Patty and I want to thank you for spending so much time with us.
Well, I thank you for the chance. I appreciate it.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, Conversation with Government Leaders. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers and the co-chair of the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government. To learn more about the endowment's programs, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. See you next week.